You're listening to TheBody.com's podcast coverage of AIDS 2008, the 17th International AIDS Conference. The conference took place in Mexico City from August 3rd through August 8th, 2008.
Okay, I'm Christoph Raelen, and I come from South Africa. I live in Johannesburg, but my heart is in Stellenbosch, in the wine area of South Africa. I've been living with HIV since 1984, and heard I was positive in 87. So this year is my 21st anniversary of knowing that I'm HIV positive.
Wow. So you're a long-time survivor.
Yeah.
Have you been on treatment since the treatment started?
Well, I was one of those people in 1990, who was put on AZT as a monotherapy. And then the Concord study came out, and I quickly realized that I probably have built up resistance long time ago. And then I decided that I'm not going to stay on a drug that makes me feel terrible. So I put myself off the drug at that stage, which probably was already long after resistance already started to develop. I had my first real serious AIDS diagnosis in 97, end of 97. So then I had to go on a trial drugs from about June 1998. I started on a combination of drugs, and I couldn't afford it at that stage. In South Africa, it would have costed more than my month's salary to just afford the drugs. So the only way was to go on antiretroviral trials. Unfortunately, it was not a good trial. The one drug failed very quickly, and then there was no salvage drugs available. So I started again when my viral load started to show that I needed it. In fact, interesting enough, I didn't start to use the drugs because I needed it. My wife and I got married. She married me knowing that I'm HIV positive in 1988. And of course, we couldn't try for children because she was negative and we wanted to keep her negative. And then when the research started to appear about how the viral load work correlates with transmittability of the virus, we started thinking about having children. And so I started on antiretroviral specifically to have children.
And do you have children now?
Yes.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, we have two. My wife is still negative. So yeah, I'm very thankful for that.
How old are they now?
5 and 3.
Wow. So you have your hands full.
Yes.
That's great. So tell me about your religious affiliation and how this interacts with living with HIV.
Yeah, I'm a Dutch Reformed minister, studied theology and worked in a congregation. I disclosed to my congregation in 1991 that I'm HIV positive. That was very early. At that stage, it was in a congregation in Namibia. And coming from a white Afrikaans background, it was extremely rare that anyone from a religious background and from the Afrikaans Dutch Reformed community would come out and say, I'm HIV positive.
What gave you the courage to do that?
Well, I just knew from the first days that I heard I was HIV positive that I believe nothing happened by chance in my life, and that God is in control. Even it's not His will that anyone suffers. Mm. But if something happens, then I know that God is with me in my suffering. And so I always knew that somehow there must be a reason God can use this negative thing in a positive way. So it took 5 years before I built up the courage to come out. And I did that because I felt what I've seen, how people reacted to HIV, was always in a judgmental way. People immediately associated HIV with, in their religious circles, with promiscuity, which equals sin, therefore the people has brought it on themselves. And I wanted to break that and say, but that's rubbish. You cannot make a direct association that everyone who contracted HIV has necessarily done something wrong. And that's not important anyway. We're all broken people, and then we need God's forgiveness if you come from a faith background. So I wanted to give information from first-hand experience. I wanted to show that the person who's living with HIV is not somebody out there who's strange, or in the South African context, or only from the black community or colored community. That could be anyone. And I wanted to bring a message of hope. and say, well, we can live with HIV.
So did you do newspaper interviews or TV interviews, or was it
I didn't have a choice. When I disclosed to the congregation, we knew this is going to turn into a media story. Because at that stage, there was nobody that was open with HIV. So, in fact, we prepared a few of the media people before the time so that they know why I'm doing this, that they can be there, and we had a press conference afterwards. And it did turn into a media situation, and I'm extremely thankful that it turned out into an opportunity to help people to really understand that HIV is a disease that can affect anyone. And it became an opportunity to break the stigma and to break the silence about HIV. So I had a lot of opportunity to break that kind of stereotyping situation in South Africa.
Did anything bad happen with the publicity?
I had my sets of bad experiences. The media itself, we could always help them to get a positive message across. But as a result of that, you had situations where my wife and I started with a campaign working in schools and doing peer education work with young people. And you had situations where the headmaster would, after we spoke at the school, would come and say he must confess that he told the head girl of the school not to kiss us because he was afraid that they might contract it. But after hearing us speak, he now realized that he was wrong. So you had that kind of situations. I was branded as the AIDS reverend, and media always write it in that way. So we had a task to help people also understand that there's a difference between HIV and AIDS. And being HIV positive doesn't mean you're in the final stage of AIDS. But still, I was labeled as the reverend with AIDS.
And you had a congregation at that point?
Yeah, up to the point where I made it public in that I'm leaving and that I'm HIV positive. The reason why I made it public and said I'm going to leave the congregation was not of that they asked me to leave or anything. It was more a situation of, I wanted to do what I said earlier, those three things of living it out positively. But the church didn't have any vision for a mission for working on HIV at AIDS. Before I disclosed my status, I went to speak to the leaders of the Dutch Reformed Church in South Africa to say, can we start with the AIDS ministry in the church? And they said, why? We don't have anyone with AIDS in the church. And there I was sitting, and I was still considering, should I tell them or shouldn't I? I think I was somehow lucky, because people knew how I contracted HIV. I didn't say that earlier, but let me bring it in now, because it does help to explain some things. I'm in the field like living with HIV, so I contracted it to blood products. At that stage, before I disclosed to the congregation, I shared that with my colleague, knew that I'm a hemophiliac, and he also knew that I'm as positive, but he demanded that I get a letter, he and the moderator of the church, that I get a letter from the hospital that will confirm that I was infected by blood products and not by sexual involvement. That was such a hurtful and painful experience, but also experience of learning how faith communities can be judgmental and very stigmatizing and blaming in the way that they act. Therefore, also in terms of the congregational response, I was extremely supportive. I had a lot of support because people knew how I contracted HIV. People would come to me and say, we've got sympathy with you. But those people, they brought it on themselves. So from that point on, I decided, I'm not saying how I contracted HIV. So I tell it now, but in most cases, I just don't tell people that at all because it's not important.
But do you think that attitude is still prevalent? There are the good infectees and there are the bad infectees. There are the innocent ones and the guilty ones.
Unfortunately, yes. It's still there. It starts to change as more HIV positive church leaders and faith leaders come forward and speak out to help them to realize you can't make the assumption that everybody who contracted HIV has necessarily done something wrong or sinful. And also to help them understand that in terms of how I understand coming from a Christian background is that's why Jesus came to die. He died for people who's broken. And so I think things change, but the automatic assumption in people's mind is still sorting people into this group of innocent and guilty.
Mm-hmm. So what do you say to people who come to you and say that HIV is a punishment from God for sinning? I mean, what's the answer?
Well, the answer is that no. Christ came once and all to die for every one of us who needed to get to be punished, but he stood in our place and got the punishment instead of us. It's about how we view God. So if you view God as the old man sitting somewhere up there and you're only ready to punish people, then that might be a perception you work with, but then you're living a life that's not really a life of abundance and joy. I believe that there are certain things that's a consequence. Things happen. You drink and drive and you do an accident. It's your accident is a consequence of your drinking. It's not a punishment from God. And the same thing in terms of HIV. A wife get infected from a husband who was not faithful to her. It's a consequence. A person who get infected of using drugs, it's a consequence. It's not a punishment from God. The God I know is a God of compassion and love and the one who's reached out with grace to us. And he's not the one who's wanting to get ready and punish people.
I guess related to that is this idea of judgment. A lot of people of faith feel that they can judge. What do you say to people who make those kind of judgments? Is that a religious act to judge?
Well, it's absolutely the reverse of that. If I think of so many verses in the biblical, if I speak as Christian from a biblical perspective, then God say, if you do away with a pointing finger and rather reach out on behalf of the hungry and the oppressed, then you will become like a well-watered garden. So, in fact, to judge people is constantly a thing that Jesus and God was and through his prophets were saying, don't do that. You're not the one to judge. I am. And God's judgment is so much different than ours. He do that with grace and compassion and not with blame. So no, we're not the one to judge at all. And I think that's the good thing of HIV positive people who are coming from a faith tradition that can say we are living with faith and we are living with HIV and we know that we experience God's grace. And if each one of us as Christians say that we're saved by grace, then we must look at where we came from ourselves and celebrate that and realize that we also need God's forgiveness in our lives and we're no different from anyone else. We're not the one to judge.
So you're a founder of an organization. This new organization is HIV positive people who are of faith and faith leaders who are going to hopefully change the world and make it more friendly for people living with HIV. It's 25 plus years into the pandemic. How come it's taken so long?
Yeah, the church is not known there for that they're always on time on things. Sometimes we must confess that we are a bit slow on reacting, and especially on issues which link to human sexuality and gender. We are perhaps a bit slow to catch up on things. But I can see that when the church do get involved, that they are the ones that can do amazing stuff. And that can really, if their hearts change, can reach out with compassion. I've seen that across the world. I work professionally for World Vision in building, helping the church to respond on HIV and AIDS. And I've seen across the world that, yeah, the church might have been slow and they might have been very damaging and hurting. And I'm the first person to confess on behalf of the church that they've hurt people with HIV. But I've also seen if they change, they can be the ones who embrace, who can ask for forgiveness, and who can really create an area where people living with HIV can experience acceptance and love and support without judgment. And what we want to do with Inarella, as we've seen it happen in Anarella, is that the church can provide that. We've seen in Africa and a number of countries that where the same places where 65 to 85% of church leaders said that AIDS is a punishment from God, that was the same group that a year later has started to reach out in care programs for orphans and vulnerable children, support groups for HIV-positive people. So I've seen that the church can do the opposite than do the painful, hurtful things. They can be agents of change.
So I guess you're still positive and you're still hopeful after all these years.
I am. I am, because I can see that people can change. People are not necessarily stuck in their ways. And if they learn to change and change their language and move away from stigma and judgment, then they can become a haven for people living with HIV.
How do you keep this optimistic spirit after all of what you've gone through? It's many years you've been positive and many years you've probably suffered stigma and discrimination. How do you right now say, well, we're going to change it now after all these years? How do you keep the courage and the optimism going?
Well, it starts with the support that I had. The first day I heard it was positive, I shared that with my friends and with my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife after 20 years. And I've experienced amazing support from them. They were my close network of people who just embraced me. And that gave me the courage to continue. But today, even though you get still disappointed very often in the bigger picture, it is on the small things, the small step-by-step, the change that you see in one person's heart and the way he reacts and change from a judgmental attitude into a supportive person. That small victories is the things that keep you alive. It is also the change that you see in people living with HIV, from people who were self-stigmatizing, blaming themselves, closed, living a life where they didn't allow themselves to grow, to a point where they start dreaming again and start to live life to the full. And it's then those small victories that you start to say, this is worth it, it's gone.
What a great story, and I wish you best of luck.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The opinions expressed by hosts or interviewees in this podcast do not constitute professional advice, should not be considered substitutes for professional services, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of Body Health Resources Corporation or its sponsors. Please see the full disclaimer online at thebody.com. If you have comments or questions, please contact us.
Thanks for listening to thebody.com's podcast coverage of AIDS 2008. For much more coverage of this conference, including news, research, video, our photo journal, and, of course, more podcasts, visit us online at thebody.com/AIDS2008.